Thanks for listening to Pod of Jake. I'm Jake. You can reach me anytime by emailing jake@blogofjake.com. I'm fortunate to have some sponsors supporting the show whose products I genuinely love and recommend. I'll start with a word on those so the rest of the episode will have no interruptions. I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Levels. Levels uses continuous glucose monitoring to track your blood sugar in real time. It allows me to see the impact that everything I do has on my metabolic health so that I can optimize my diet and exercise accordingly. Wearing the Levels patch, I feel like I'm living in the future. There's this moment when you raise your phone to the back of your arm, it vibrates and shows your glucose level right on the screen. It's this instantaneous look inside yourself, an in-the-moment snapshot of what's going on inside your body. And while it's only showing one simple measurement for now, it's enough for me to see the future. And that's exciting. It's exciting because I believe that we can live meaningfully longer and healthier lives than we do today, and I believe technologies like Levels will help us to get there. Levels is currently running an exclusive beta program with a waitlist of over 100,000 people, but you can skip the line and join Levels today by using my link in the show notes, levels.link/Jake. Again, that's levels.link/Jake. This episode is brought to you by Aura. That's Oura. The Oura Ring, from my perspective, is the single best wearable on the market. I use it to measure my sleep, activity, and readiness on a daily basis. I bought my Oura Ring several months ago before talking with the company's CEO on the podcast. I haven't taken it off since. I believe what gets measured gets managed. So if you care at all about your health, which you should, you have to measure your sleep in order to manage it. Oura measures much more than just my time in bed. It tracks my REM sleep versus deep sleep, my resting heart rate and heart rate variability, my temperature, my activity, and much, much more. For $299, you can get your own Oura Ring on auraring.com. That's auraring.com. Auraring.com. Okay, let's get into it. Thank you so much, Heaton, for joining me on the show today. You are a prolific entrepreneur as well as an investor, having founded a few companies now, currently co-founder and CEO of Neera, previously Kissmetrics and Crazy Egg, invested in at least 100 companies, I think. And you're pretty big on Twitter, just sort of influencing the space. So it's great to have you. I think best place to get started, as I usually do, would be just to hear your story. For those who don't know you, sort of as early as you're willing to start to where you are today would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the number is like 200 investments or advisory roles now. And I kind of slowed down more recently as people have kind of started building more businesses, which I know sounds weird, but I like doing things before other people. And I was investing as an angel investor before this whole kind of explosion of everyone becoming an angel investor kind of became a thing and everyone has a startup. And I don't even know what the word startup means anymore in the same way that I used to. So anyway, that's my little asterisk for you. So yeah, and it's still counting. I still occasionally invest, but I try not to. I'm actually much more interested in investing in crypto related things on the side, so to speak, and then obviously investing in my own business and putting more energy towards that. So this is, I've basically reallocated capital to more crypto NFTs and things like that versus even startups at the moment, except for some exceptions like friends of mine or something like that. So I'll answer your question as quick as I can. For me, my story as a kind of founder, entrepreneur, and even professional kind of career, if you want to call it that, although I don't think people like me have careers, but that's a different story. It actually started when I was 4 or 5. My father told me I should be an entrepreneur. I should work for myself. He's an anesthesiologist. My mom was an anesthesiologist as well. And my dad also runs health camps all over the world, free ones. So cataracts, in different countries in Africa, to like when there's an earthquake somewhere, he'll go and set up a health camp there and help out whatever way he and his colleagues that he brings over can, all completely volunteer and completely as a set of nonprofits. And he also, I think, did the first, if not one of the first free surgeries in America. He's not a surgeon, he's an anesthesiologist, but he kind of orchestrated it and made sure it happened. So I was, and so since I was 5, he told me that. He didn't have all the stuff going on by then, but he had this thing where he told me, look, I, as a physician, as an anesthesiologist, don't use my brain. And he explained it in this way. And again, everyone can have their own opinion about this. This is just what he told me. He's like, there's a ceiling on my capacity in the jobs that I have and in the role that I have in the hospital or the hospitals he worked at. He never wanted to get into private practice because I think he really enjoyed those free health camps and helping people like that. I mean, it's not just cataract surgery. He was literally helping people see for the first time and stuff like that in those health camps that he does. So it's like pretty fulfilling work from that level for him. And so he kind of ingrained this in me. And then he also said that most of my job is muscle memory because I go and I'm an anesthesiologist and I have to like put people to sleep and then wake them up and make sure they have that round trip. And he's done it so many times, obviously, that he kind of just does it naturally. There's even this thing he invented called the Sha gag, where when the patient does a certain thing and you see it, that's when you remove the intubator tube. There's less disruption to the person's throat, because a lot of times that stuff can be really damaging temporarily. And so he has all these things that he does, and he's always teaching students too. So he's always has residents that are learning from him because that's how the position that he puts himself in at these hospitals. And so this is my dad, and this is a guy when I was 4 or 5 years old telling me this. And I'm pretty sure by then he was in his early 30s. I haven't done the math fully yet, as you can imagine. But yeah, he was like 20. Well, he's probably like 34, 35. So he wasn't like super old or anything at that time. But that was his wisdom for me. And so I've never had a job in my life, and the one that I talk about that I had doesn't count. It was actually in the IT department at a medical devices company called Masimo, not the clothing brand. My dad knew the founders when they were in the garage, and he was able to get me an internship in the IT department when I was in high school. So it doesn't really count. I don't remember much about it. And so, kind of going back again, 4 or 5, he told me that by the time I was about, between essentially like the second I could use a screwdriver, so about 5 or 6, really well, I started opening up everything in the house. Every electronic device. I mean, you're talking about a time when CRT TVs, so big TVs that are like 2 feet wide, not like these thin LEDs and all that that we have today and all that fun stuff. That was the norm. So I would open the whole thing up and then I try to put it back together. And there was this book that was my favorite book called How It Works. It's still a book that's around today. And it's like this big, thick book. I had like a whole set of encyclopedias. And for me, that sort of kicked off this idea that like, two things. One, I wanted to see how everything worked and break it apart and try to put it back together. And it was just a constant thing I did in the house. I did that. I literally still remember the inside of telephones, the inside of that TV, and all the tube that was in there and all that kind of stuff. And even the trouble I had putting it back together. Fast forward a little bit, I was 8 years old, and then that was the first time I got a computer. My dad bought me a computer. He had been taking me to the hospital because he would do rounds at night. He was actually a resident at the time, so very early in his career, so to speak. And he would take me to the hospital, drop me off in the IT department, and I would just sit there. And they would essentially either give me things to do or just like let me do whatever I wanted on any of the computers over there. So that's how I got into computers. I started programming Q Basic back in the day and all that, fast forwarding a little bit. And I never programmed after that. I would go to Radio Shack when that was a thing and create these four whatever loops so that the computers would just keep spinning numbers and no one knew how to shut them down because they didn't know about Control Q. So that was kind of my early sort of journey. And again, I've never worked for anyone. So by the time that I was in high school, I wanted to fix up my car. So I created a LLC and started buying and selling car parts with the sole purpose of fixing up my own car. I had a Honda Accord. It was 4 doors. It was lowered. It had a turbo. I had painted it. I had shaved the door handles so you couldn't even see them. And you would push a button and then the doors would pop open. I had set it up. So I did a lot of the electricals inside so that I had like turn signals that alternated. And I had these things called city lights that would show purple in the headlights, all kinds of crazy stuff. I had a black light in the car. And that was just one of my cars. I had a bunch of other ones too. But I was really into sort of that entrepreneurial spirit because of my dad from back then. And then in college, I had a whole bunch of random businesses, all kinds, and a few that worked out really well. So by the time I got out, I didn't really have like to work, so to speak, in terms of the traditional sense. And so my my now wife, back then my girlfriend, she has a brother, and he had one customer paying him $3,500 a month to do SEO, and he was in his summer between high school and college, so he was technically just getting into college after high school, and he had that going on. So my wife was like, "Hey, you should work with him. I know you know you're pretty good with the internet. You don't know internet marketing or anything, but you should work with him. See if you guys can work together." And so we ended up starting a consulting company doing internet marketing. And fast forward a little bit, and we realized that we wanted to build software because this was back in 2003 to about 2005. And we tried to build, like, we were making money on the internet marketing side pretty fast, and we're cash flow positive and all that. And then we started pouring all of our money into hiring engineers because neither him or I were engineers. And so we try to build about a dozen different software products. I mean, we try to build a web analytics tool with like a hit counter where we're just showing you the hits on the site because that was what you did back in the day. We created a podcast advertising network that never worked out for a bunch of reasons. We created a buzz tracker to show you all the different blogs that were kind of talking about you, kind of like Technoratty, but a little bit different, and even like let you do Flickr searches and stuff like that when Flickr was a thing. And then we landed on my first software business at work called Crazy Egg, and we launched it in 2005. So now we're about 16 years later, and it's still around. It's a self-funded SaaS business. We were one of the first, if not the first, depending on how you look at it. We pioneered the idea of heat maps on top of a website to help website owners improve their websites by looking at visual representation of where people are clicking versus looking at pie graphs and charts and stuff like that. And then we were, and that was and is still is a self-funded company. We actually tried to raise money for it early on, just couldn't. And then we had a new idea, and that ended up being my kind of last company before this one, which was KissMetrics, that we kind of started in 2008, and we spun it out of Crazy Egg and raised money for it and went on a whole long journey that I'm not going to bore you with right now or the audience. And I left officially in 2012 after lots of ups and downs of the business, all my doing. I take all the blame. And then kind of chilled out for a while, started investing a bunch, wanted to see if that's something I wanted to do full time. Turns out I enjoy investing a lot. I enjoy helping founders a lot, but I enjoy operating, building teams, working with the team, building product, servicing customers a lot, heck of a lot more in terms of the control I have and the ability to influence things than as an investor. So I met my co-founder at Nira about 5 or 6 years ago. So about 2015, 2016. And then we started working together. We actually met because I was advising a company, and she ended up leaving her corporate job and started consulting with them. And we just hit it off and got along really well and started helping some startups and stuff. And then we were jumped into doing some consulting. And then we realized that we should be building software too. And we started building a bunch of software. And Nira is like probably like now, I want to say another dozen, but like 5 to 10 things down that we built. And now we're very focused on Nira, and we found product market fit. And what Nira does, it helps you protect your company documents from unauthorized access because now, like, collaboration is kind of a big deal, especially with COVID and remote work. But in general, it was already kind of a big deal, and people could share links to documents all over the place. People were creating documents or are creating documents from their personal account. And they're like, companies have a big problem trying to figure out who has access to what. And we're really focused on solving that problem. So anyway, I wanted to do that fast so we can get to the meat of this, but hopefully that was as comprehensive as I could make it.
Yeah, no, that was awesome. I don't think I'm trying to think back 70 plus episodes in now. I don't think I've had anyone start at age 4 or 5 yet. So that was pretty cool. And certainly a lot of twists and turns along the way. I want to double click on, I think it was college, maybe even a little bit of high school before Crazy Egg, before the consulting firm. What sounds like a few entrepreneurial experiences that bought you your financial freedom. And I don't know if that was like a tremendous amount of money, but at least it was enough for a graduating college student to have enough to not feel like he needed to work. I'm curious about those days. Like, what were some of these? You mentioned some of the types of business ideas that you tried, but what were some of the ones that like really hit? And what do you think it was, it's pretty unusual, maybe more usual now, but generally pretty unusual to like be able to earn that type of financial freedom before you even graduate school. And I know you had the entrepreneurial bug since like kindergarten, but what was it about like your character that enabled you to just bootstrap these businesses from car parts to consulting and sort of make them work just by sort of, it sounds like sheer will of force?
Only one thing, but say extreme curiosity. And it still drives me today. I just want to know. When I want to know something, I want to know. So I'll give you a good story for that, which is about now, but is going to probably be more relevant to the folks that are listening. But let me answer your question first. I just tried a lot of things. And that's where that answer to you comes, which is curiosity. I mean, I'm a little kid opening up every single electronic device I could find. Just because I wanted to see how it worked. It just blew my mind. I started building computers when I was like 8 or 9. This is when like it was like 8088, 8086, 286. I mean, most people that are listening probably have no clue what I'm talking about. These
I
were
have
the
no idea. I have no idea what you're
these
talking about.
these were the CPUs. It was 8086, IBM, blah, blah, blah. And that was the chip in the computer. And then we went to like 486, and then we went to Pentium. Right? Like these were the CPUs and these were the things I remember from back then. We had to go deal with VGA card, just like we deal with the GPUs these days from NVIDIA, you know? And that's actually a good dovetail into kind of how I feel about curiosity. So today I have two computers and I just got another one yesterday and then I better stop this obsession. But I have two computers mining and I'm making about 10 bucks a day using NiceHash. And I have a bunch of Binance chain staking because there's a pancake swap is my favorite right now. And I got in pretty early. And I have NFTs, of course, that I've bought now. And I have crypto, savings in crypto, if you want to call it that. If crypto even lets you do savings, if that makes any sense, because you just end up spending about NFTs or something. But anyway, that's how I do it. If I'm curious about something, when I decide my curiosity is at a peak and I need to go figure it out, I just go do stuff. That's it. That's how I've learned everything. Like even engineering, I'm not a programmer, but put me in front of an engineer, I'll help them solve whatever problem they have. I don't care if it's a deep code problem. That's it. And I think if you marry curiosity with a customer obsession when it comes to business, that's how you build things. That's how you make things work. That's how you make sure that what you're doing matters to other people. Because it's fun to have curiosity for sure, but it's more fun to be curious and then be customer obsessed in a business and help them out. Now, if you're kind of independent and you're kind of in this world today, with all these things going on, you can make a lot of money without ever thinking about a customer because of all the arbitrage opportunities that exist today. And so going back to like my college years and all that, like I was just very good at finding arbitrage opportunities. Even with our consulting company for a long time, I was running a bunch of affiliate campaigns with Yahoo ads to dating services just for fun because I could measure it. I could basically buy low, sell high. So if you want me to just like go after it, like it's basically curiosity, customer obsession, and the basic arbitrage that everything ends up amounting to in the world when it comes to business, which is buy low, sell high. That's it.
Interesting. So you're driven by curiosity. I'm curious what sparked your curiosity in the first place about crypto. How'd you get into that? Because it sounds like you're pretty deep now. I'm curious the origin story there.
My buddy was transacting on Silk Road and he told me about Bitcoin back then. And that's it. And then there's been times where I'm hesitant, like NFTs. I was a little too hesitant earlier this year on a few of those areas because of gas fees. And it was just bugging me. And then I realized that, like, I'm just being dumb. If there's just so much volume and action happening, who cares about gas fees? That's the thing that stopped me, believe it or not, as an amateur, right? So I'm not making that mistake again because these costs and these extra things, if there's volume and people talking about it and these things happening, it's better to just go dig in and take some kind of calculated risk, so to speak, on money. And all this stuff these days is all about money, and finance and things like that. That's like the those are the structures that we're bringing down, so to speak, and pull and kind of recreating right now, as far as I can tell. And so, yeah, I got in really early. I was just holding a bunch, and then kind of Monero came around, started holding a bunch of that, and then eventually I started holding some Ethereum, but didn't do any transactions from it until kind of late last year, early this year. And it's been fun. And honestly, like I've with all the NFT stuff going on and all these things in the world today, it feels like the new internet. It feels like back in the day when I would dial up to a BBS, a bulletin board system, again, another thing that's going to date me. And I would dial up, and like when I was a kid, I was like 12, 13. For a few months, I was running a $500 phone bill, and my dad was pissed. And this is when you had to dial up. And what I mean by dial up is there was somebody running a computer where you could dial into it because of the way the phone lines worked, and you could be on an electronic system that you could basically go type things in and chat with people and play games and stuff, but like all like 8-bit stuff, like really, really small time, so to speak, compared to what we do today and all the graphics and all the the bandwidth available and all that. This was dial up, 2400 modem, 14,000, 14.4K. Like the speeds were really low. So all you could do is text with people. So I made so many friends back then by basically dialing into these BBSs and have, and it was basically like a massive chat room, massive like forum, but connected essentially, because there was no internet as we know it today. There was no browser. It was all command line, and that's what we knew. So that's what we did. Even WordPerfect was a software, and it was all like very not a GUI, not a graphical user interface, right? Like the world was very different. So it was kind of those days that inspired me to look dig in today. Because once I started seeing that this is something exciting, it's something that a lot of people need help understanding, which is always fun for me. That's kind of what really piqued it kind of more this year. I know a lot of people like get into it, and this is totally fine because they're looking for that arbitrage opportunity, and all of it is underlying arbitrage. I believe the world is about arbitrage, and like you should be learning how to think in a buy low, sell high kind of mentality, just because most things run like that, if not everything, except like pure art and creativity, of course. So yeah, that's how I got into it back in the day. Had a bunch of Bitcoin because my friend's like, hey, dude, this is happening. Like, this is what I'm doing on Silk Road. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Not for me in terms of what you're doing on it, but very interesting that like transactions are happening, and they're happening through this new kind of currency. And that was really the enlightening point. And he's someone, this friend of mine is someone I went to college with, and he's always on the cutting edge of everything like this. Very privacy minded and security minded. That's why he also turned me on to Monero super early. So yeah, that's kind of the story for me. It starts, kind of back in the day, if you want to say what, like 10 years ago, 9 years ago now.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Monero as like the second thing, after Bitcoin. Maybe not, it might not have been so sequential, but it sounds like that was the second
It
sort of big
actually very
thing.
much was
Oh, it
because
was.
the influence, because look, you get into this stuff because of the influence of somebody always,
Right.
right? Whether it's somebody on Twitter or somebody's whatever. Like today, like three or four people DM me after a spaces I did yesterday on Twitter, and they're like, and I offered this, but I'm like, hey, hit me up. Any questions you have about this? And they're like, how do I learn about NFTs? And I'm like, oh, go to this Discord. This is the one, right? Or go read this thing. This is the thing that you should be looking at about this stuff. And to me, this friend of mine was really into privacy, really into kind of that whole world. And early on with Bitcoin, that was the world. That was it. It was people trying to transact things that are illicit, transact things that they couldn't do in the normal world because it was higher risk, right? And again, that's the fringes. You can have opinions about, the ethics and all that stuff. All good. This is a friend of mine. I'm just listening to him, meeting up with him, and seeing what he's up to because he's always on the cutting edge. And then, a little bit later, he's like, hey, you should check out Monero because it's a privacy-centric token, coin, whatever, crypto. And I was like, oh, okay. And for me, it was just like, oh, he said Bitcoin. I bought some Bitcoin. Cool. It went down and up, but he said do it. And he's smart about this stuff. And not just I trust him, but he's able to explain it to me and show me why it's working. And then same with Monero. And so I have a bunch of Monero because of that, because I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. These fringe things are how everything starts. And that's why, like, I'm kind of upset at myself for caring about gas fees, because that's a fringe thing. It'll change over time. We could have a long discussion about, you know, where things are going and Solana and all that stuff. But like at the end of the day, like it's a curiosity, right, that drives all of this for me. And usually it's somebody who kind of brings things to the forefront for us. And then our journey starts. So for me, it was this person who was security, privacy, illicit stuff kind of minded. And so he's the one that turned me onto it. And honestly, that's where without Silk Road, I don't know if we'd be this far on transacting with crypto this fast, to be honest, because those transactions were happening such a long time ago.
Yeah, that was certainly a big bucket of the overall activity for a long while. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know a lot of people were introduced to it by like similar means. And you know, the privacy coins I think are really interesting as well. At the end of the day, Bitcoin isn't like some you know, panacea for hiding your identity. Ultimately, if you're like attached to your wallet or whatever, then you can sort of people, it's very evident like what you're transacting and who you're sending money to and things like that. Whereas Monero and Zcash and a bunch of others that are coming up are trying to sort of become a truly private, truly anonymous version of Bitcoin, which I think to me makes a lot of sense for the future. But we'll see where all that lands. I want to talk a bit. You mentioned the spaces that you did yesterday. You're big on Lazy Lions, and you know, I've seen like half my likes these days on Twitter are coming from people with either a penguin or a lion or an ape or something rather, a CryptoPunk rarely as their profile picture. And I'm just like, you know, it's hard enough to follow the things that you care about within crypto, and then the things that are just sort of in your peripherals might as well be totally foreign. And this whole NFT avatar thing is relatively foreign to me. I'm curious, you know, you've got the Lazy Lion as your profile picture on Twitter. What's your perspective on NFTs now that you've sort of gotten over the gas fees and particularly avatar and what this says about like where things are headed?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's such a good one. I'm a Leo. And so the lions are just naturally resonated with me. So one day I went shopping and I'm like, hey, let me just check out these NFTs and see what's up. I had no thought of turning it into my profile pic, PFP, as the cool kids say, apparently. And I found one, and I found one I like. I'm like, this is kind of crazy. Like, I like this one. Like, this is the energy I have right now about this stuff. And I've had the same Twitter profile pic for like 10 years. I was one of the first 5,000 users on Twitter because a good friend of mine was like user number like zero outside of the team. And he introduced me to it. And yeah, it's time for a change. By the way, I turned 40, so that helped. And so my excuse for anything I do now that's outside of work is it's a midlife crisis. So my work's already hard. It's a startup, you know, like it's hard. And I've done this 3 or 4 times before. And so this is such an outlet for me that helps me actually stay more motivated at work, believe it or not. Because I have something to feed my curiosity, I can move forward on my own. And most of the time with startups, you can't do that. You have like things you're waiting on. This is just a harsh truth that most people don't realize. And so basically, to me, like I just had an impulse a few weeks ago, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to change my profile pic. It's a birthday gift to myself. Because, you know, this stuff costs money, dude, right? Like, no matter how you look at it. And so that's what felt right. So I did a tweet. I said, this is my belated birthday gift to myself because I found it after my birthday. And I'm changing my profile pic, trying it on. And it's a Leo themed one. And it's kind of stuck. I'm into it. Like, I don't know why my face matters anymore online. You know, it's kind of weird. And it's not out of being trendy or anything. I don't really care about, I've never cared about being trendy, but it was a personal resonance with that project. And then I got in the Discord. I have this weird thing where like, I know a lot of people get in the Discord before they buy these NFTs. And I think that's a good thing. Nothing wrong there. I actually like to really lurk and watch the community on Twitter and see what's happening. This community was rabid and very involved. Every time NFT was said, every time like someone called them out in a good way, usually they would jump and talk and like engage, and it felt positive. It didn't feel like, hey, I know some people think like, you know, I'll say we now are shilling or anything. No, it's just a thing. It's like a thing. Like we go raid a tweet because like, it's fun. And like, we're just showing up and saying, what's up? That's it. You do what you want with that. But like, that's what we're doing. And it's honestly the community vibes, like straight up. And it reminds me of like these feelings that I had when I was growing up and getting into this stuff. And what I mean by this stuff is computers and collaborating with people online and engaging with them online and chatting with them online. I mean, a lot of people are not going to appreciate any of this because they grew up with it. My kids did, right? Kid had an iPad when he was like, I don't know, like 3, 2, 1, I don't know, right? And we just gave it to him. I have pictures of little boy Jaden, you know, my son, now he's 11, with a little iPad when they first came out. It's so cool. Like, and like, he's native now. He has an iPad. Like, he's all about it. And he's like up on the Discord, has his own YouTube, and is playing his random games and stuff, and working on getting him into NFTs and things like that. But this is it. This is the world today. This is where we're going. Like, whether it's like the NFTs or like what comes next after them, I'm not in it to say, hey, this is where the future is. I'm in it to say we're going in one direction. And in my life, every time we go in one direction as a society, there's no stopping us. Like, we're going, like, we're going crypto. We're going there. Like, we're there. And this is not going away. And so it's not like, hey, you need to hop on it. You can completely ignore it. It's totally fine. But if you're curious and if you're into like, just the world and the future, like, why wouldn't you start dabbling or playing around, or at least go get a Coinbase account and buy like, I don't know, $100 of crypto every month or something, do something, right? At least then you'll have some. And at least then you'll start getting more and more curious, if nothing else. That's my take today. And like, where we go, like, wow, like, look at vFriends. Look at how it's an admission to a conference and so much more. Look at what the price of admission is now. It's kind of insane. Like, this is where we're at right now. Look at the price of the punks. Look at the price of the apes. Like these are the things that are where the momentum is. And for me, the Lions in particular, it's about the community and how much I resonate with it and how helpful everyone is already off of being involved in a few weeks. Like, I've made new friends. People have taught me things. I've DM'd with so many people I wouldn't have been in contact with unless I changed my profile pic or have a Lion and am involved in the community just by being in the Discord. Also, Discord is such a godsend, like, for all this stuff, makes everything so much easier. It's insane. So yeah, and not that every community's run really well, I think most are not, but when they are run really well, you can just feel it. And when the projects are just strong in terms of having a roadmap and doing new innovative things for us and drops, or now they have like, they're gonna have like Roar rewards for the Lions, where like we all get a kind of a cut of the bounty, so to speak. It's kind of cool. And in their case, it's kind of like a airline mileage program is how they're thinking about it, to be part of the community and participate, which is kind of cool. So I'm in it to learn. I'm in it for the curiosity more than anything else, because I've just seen when I do that, and when a lot of people are going towards something, like, it's worth our time. It's worth digging in. It's worth understanding. It's worth not being confused. You know, I know you mentioned there's so many things going on and all that. Yeah, but like, for me, I'm not an internet native. I'm a computer native. I'm a network native. Like, I used to run around with network cables, like, trying to make things work, you know, and tie computers together when people really weren't doing that, or like, you know, and that was like part of my upbringing, because my dad would just throw me in the hospital in the IT department. And like, what did I have? A bunch of computers, right? And stuff like that around me. And like, the IT people were so cool. They're like, just do whatever you want. Don't worry about it. And like, when I broke my computer, I'd go back to them like, hey, I broke this thing. Can you help me fix it? And that's how I learned. Dude, the internet's like that. Everything we do is like that now. It's so easy to learn anything, whether you go all the way to YouTube, all the way to a Discord community about something, like, it's on. Like, think about how much we can accomplish together. Think about how easy it is to get all this access. And again, wouldn't expect too many people on this call to appreciate that, but I'm telling you, that's where we came from. This is what the internet was about. This is what the pre-internet was about. This is what being connected is about. So anyway, that's my rant. I know I was ranting on that. And I'm not a zealot or anything about this stuff. Like, I just like it. And I have a lot of curiosity. And if anyone else does, I'm happy to help them out. Also, I'm drinking from so many fire hoses on the crypto stuff right now. It's insane. And that's how I keep up. Passive observation.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned, like, you know, joining the Discord is like the primary, like, you first monitor on Twitter and then you join the Discord and like sort of immerse yourself in this community and you just learn sort of via osmosis that way almost. You know, 10 years ago, I think if you ask people, like, how do you learn from the internet, they'd say, maybe this is wrong, but I think they would say, like, you know, websites, blogs, and YouTube.
Forums. Probably. Yeah, and forums. Yeah, and forums, that was like right when YouTube was really starting to take off. So yeah. And forums, though, have been around for a long time. And then before that, it was like IRC. Basically, right. Discord is a new IRC.
Right. So, maybe five, maybe I got the dates wrong a little bit. Like
No, it's all
maybe
good. I'm
5 years.
just, yeah.
Maybe 5 years ago, YouTube would have been the answer. I think even, today, most people who aren't on Discord would today say YouTube, right? But
YouTube, hands down.
do you think Discord is actually, because I'm actually, I've been in Discords. I find it to be just maybe I haven't found like the right ones yet or something, but it's either like a total flood of notifications or else I turn the notifications off and then I can't keep up. And if I want to, like, God forbid, I want to join like four of these, it's just like even crazier. So I don't think I've like gotten it right yet. But do you think Discord, I know it's like going completely off in terms of like users and groups and everything like that, channels and servers. Do you think it's actually going to sort of profoundly change the way in which people learn? I know it's a big thing for like community building, but I haven't thought of it as much as like a new arena for learning via the internet. Is that sort of how you see it?
If someone builds a thriving community on Discord, it is all about learning. If the Discord is thriving, because you're learning new things, people are sharing them. I mean, the first thing you do in an NFT Discord, for example, once you join, is you go to the announcements and you go just figure out what is the history of this thing? What are they saying? And then you go figure out like, what are they talking about in here? Are they just all about like the floor price? Are they about other stuff? Are they trying to help each other? Are they trying to help people get set up with MetaMask and stuff like that if they don't know how? Because people are jumping into these things with no clue. That's what's happening. With the Lazy Lions, I found a Discord where they're doing all that. And it's a well-run community. So I would tell you that like the answer is yes, but. So yes, I do believe things are going to move to Discord. I just see it. And this is what happens. You just start seeing it and then you're like, oh, this is what's going to happen. I think Slack missed the boat on that, but Slack's a professional like product. So it totally makes sense on why Discord's working from the gamers and the servers concept and the bots and the voice chat. I mean, it's pretty holistic system for community. You don't need anything else for community. Maybe like you need a forum too, because like you're trying to build some things out and get some SEO juice or something like that. Sure. But at the end of the day, like yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more community development and all that. Built into there. Because like what it boils down to that YouTube is missing to a great extent is a sense of belonging. And these Discords, these communities, they create that for you. In fact, even the people that are on YouTube that are highly successful, like in crypto and other places, they have a Patreon. They have something else they link you to where they try to engage you or try to get you to buy their membership or whatever. Some of those places are awesome. And I've learned a lot from a bunch of those too. So to me, it's like Discord is almost a big extension of like the sense, not even extension, it's like a way to increase the sense of belonging people have with your brand or your project or your whatever. And I think that like it's pretty impressive what people are able to do in those things today.
Yeah, I mean, you started off the conversation with telling your story about talking about you've always done things, tried to do things before people ended up sort of seeing that that was what came to fruition, top 5,000 first people on Twitter and angel investing before angel investing was a really thing. And now you've sort of moved on from that and you're doing the crypto and you're in the Discords. I can't help but think like I'm just going to look at what you're doing and think that that's, maybe what's coming up next for more people. I want to sort of change gears a little bit. I was in preparing for the conversation, like I found that, you've been working remote basically this whole time, since you started companies, after college and everything like that, from Crazy Egg and all the above, you've been remote. And now the whole world sort of in the flip of a switch went remote. And I want to sort of like contrast this with what you said. Like whenever you see things going in one direction, you were referring to crypto. That thing's just like going to happen, and like you don't have to jump on board right away, but it's just sort of happening, and you can acknowledge it or you can ignore it for a while. Remote's this weird thing where, just by sort of external circumstance with COVID and everything, everyone just like had to do it for what we thought would be, some people thought would be a temporary thing. I tended to think it would be a bit more sticky, but you would sort of expect that it would sort of, revert back, not all the way, but partially. I'm curious to think from like a macro perspective what your thoughts are on like, okay, we're like a year and a half in now, and I don't think that many people have flipped back. You probably have more, you're probably seeing more than I am, but it just doesn't seem like things are flipping back nearly as much or as quickly as a lot of people thought. And then secondarily to the macro view, I'd love to hear, like, you've been doing this for 15, 20 years now. A lot of people are, 15, 20 months in. What advice do you have for people who are sort of picking up working remotely after years of being used to working in an office setting?
I've been doing it 18 years remote. And I love meeting people in person too. So again, I tend to not be a zealot about any of this, even though this is what I do. So it's more like, hey, this is what I do. If you're into it, cool. If you're not into it, cool. Right? Like that's how I am about this stuff. 'Cause like, different strokes, different folks, whatever. But basically because of everyone overnight having to become remote and not your standard remote, but more work from home, kids at home, stuck at home, kids on Zoom, all this stuff, it's a little abnormal. And now we're coming back to somewhat of a more normal remote environment, but yet the companies are not transitioning fully to remote. I'm sorry, to hybrid or even working from the office yet. A lot of them have, but there's still hybrid and there's this like kind of intermediary phase right now before a lot of companies decide what they do in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years. But there's a one fundamental thing that happens when we are all collectively, and this rarely happens, but it does, when we're all collectively forced to deal with change. And what happens is this basic thing. What we thought was not possible in this new scenario, all of a sudden we realize that those things are actually possible. So a lot of people thought they couldn't do enterprise sales without meeting customers in person. Well, guess what? We just proved that we can, big time. So now what? You gonna go back to the old way? You gonna go back to flying? You gonna go back to having to meet people in person just to close a deal? No, you're gonna try not to do that. Sure, there's gonna be big components of that that come back big time. Like in-person events are coming back big, like they will, but they're not gonna come back as big as they used to be because there's so many of these that are virtual and people are, I don't wanna say getting away with it, but essentially in their eyes, getting away with it without knowing that this was even possible. For me, I knew all of this was possible. Not that I'm a genius or anything, but I've been doing it for 18 years. You can run a hyper growth startup. You can run a self-funded business. You can run any of these things as long as they don't require physical presence, of course. So coffee shops, other things obviously are not possible remote, but you could do all these other things remotely. You could start a coffee brand remotely and do a subscription service to send out coffee to people and roast it in your garage or whatever it is. You can do that. And that's remote. But like us doing work because of Slack, and because of Google Docs and all the collaboration tools like Notion and Coda and Miro and Loom and all these things, why would we go back to something that's not as efficient unless we really, really needed to or wanted it or enjoyed it? I don't think most people enjoyed going to the office and commuting. So how are we going to go back to that if all of a sudden we had to become used to something else and a lot of things that we didn't think were possible are now possible just because everyone was forced to do? Never before has anything like that happened. That probably has before, but I don't have any parallels to all of a sudden, overnight, having to change to a new way of working across the globe, period. And that's what has accelerated everything. And of course, there's going to be depressions because of that too. Accelerated Zoom, Zoom's down a little bit in terms of usage compared to what it was, but it's still insane. All the schools are not using Zoom anymore. Right. But they needed that infrastructure during that period of time, and Zoom got a lot of benefit from that. And so that's the way I think about this stuff. You see it, and then there's an accelerant, and it's not just pouring gas on the fire, it's pouring rocket fuel on that fire. And now, like, we just have to figure out, okay, now we're up in the air. What do we do now? Do we go back down? Do we keep going up and going in this direction, or do we find some medium and just stay here? Right? I don't know. But what I do know is that we have now become used to things that we never thought were possible previously or could have imagined.
Yeah, I think it's remarkable. This is something that's shown the whole world, something that I think has always been true. It's just the adaptability of humans is
Oof.
insane, and it can happen so quickly. And then once you adapt to something, it takes a hard push in the other direction to go back to the other thing wherever you came from or whatever it is. We just sort of keep moving forward. So I think that's a good place to wrap things up, and we're coming up on time. But Heaton, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show. Where can people go? You mentioned Twitter, but anywhere else you want to drive people to follow what's going on with you? And I'm sure if they do, they'll be a few years ahead of everyone else based
I
on
appreciate that
what you've been
compliment.
doing.
I appreciate that compliment. Yeah, my Twitter, it's HNSHAH. And otherwise, you know, my company's nira.com, NIRA.com. And I mean it. My Twitter handle, which I just said, at gmail.com. If you have any questions, thoughts, just want to react to what I said, I'm always open to chat, even on DM or whatever, and I'll do my best to respond. But yeah, I love this stuff. I just love the fact that we're almost at a new place on the internet again, a place where like everything can change. And I truly believe we're at that point at this point. I might sound kind of crazy when I say that, but like, just look at what's happening. It's just true.
I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you very much again, and hopefully talk again soon.
Thanks for having me, Jake.